This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
Thank you, Shannon. Here's Michigan State University President Luana Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis with MSU Office of Financial Aid Director Rick Shipman.
It's our pleasure to welcome Rick Shipman, who's MSU Director of Financial Aid, but also recognized as one of the experts in student financial aid by his peers around the country. Very, very complicated topic, but one that's on the minds of everyone who's thinking about sending a child to college. So, Rick, we want to talk with you a bit about, from your perspective, what are the kinds of aid that an institution like Michigan State administers that comes through your office?
Well, we have a whole set of programs, including grants that are based on financial need, and a grant, of course, is gift aid that does not have to be paid back. It's the best kind to get. Scholarships that tend to be based on academic performance, athletic performance, musical ability, artistic ability, etc. And again, it's a gift source of aid that doesn't have to be repaid. Also, we do a lot of business with student loans, and the loans are the largest area of dollars committed nationally, and in Michigan State it represents a pretty significant percentage of dollars too. And then we administer a federal college work study program, and that helps students who don't have work experience and are needy find work on campus generally and certain off-campus jobs also. So it's a whole set of programs between gift aid, loans, and work.
So for a place like Michigan State, how much money total does that amount to?
About $650 million last year, and it'll be a little bit more this year, I suspect. And that is largely going to students who are U.S. citizens. A lot of the dollars are going to residents of the state of Michigan. And that money is primarily not based on financial need. It is based on something other than financial need, including federal programs, state programs, and private dollars that we administer that are in the form of gifts.
Well, so Mark, as a parent, has already gone through this process. So the key element is to fill out the federal financial aid program form, no matter where you're going or what you might think you qualify for. So
I actually have one in college. I have one that will be coming in next year, and then I have the 13-year-old. And that's where most of my fear is right now, is on the 13-year-old.
So he has to fill out his form again, probably, for his second child. And
we still call it a financial aid form. It's technically the free application for federal student aid, although it is used to determine eligibility for need-based programs that are administered by colleges and universities and also by a lot of private organizations. But it's really now referred to as FAFSA on the web, and it is all online. And in fact, about 98% of people around the country who complete the FAFSA do it online. And the nice thing about completing it online is it has gotten smarter over the years, and it can tell based on how you answer one question the next question that you should be asked. So for, as we say in the financial aid world, so a person who's clearly very needy doesn't have to keep proving that they're needy. They simply are not asked the question multiple times. People who are in a more questionable category are asked more questions so that you can really determine whether or not they are truly needy. And so it's gotten a lot smarter over the years. It is a very fast process, regardless of what people outside of financial aid say. The average person can complete it in about 20 minutes if they have their tax forms, their W-2s, in front of them when they start the process. If they don't have those things in front of them, it also lets you save your session and come back later and complete it when you've gotten the answer to those
questions. So the best advice is to make sure that you have the extra documentation with you when you open the computer and allow for about a half an hour, and Right. And you can finish a very important process for your family.
Absolutely. And we encourage people to apply as early as they can for the upcoming aid cycle. And if they don't have their tax returns, they don't have their W-2s at that point, then we say use last year's information, use your last pay stub, whatever you have, and do a fair estimate, because you do have an opportunity to go back in and to correct data later if you want to. Also, the federal government now allows families to indicate that they want an IRS match to be performed. And when they click that box, and IRS data is pulled directly into the FAFSA data whenever you file your tax return and it's sent to the school. So it's a built-in check to make sure that families that are estimating data actually have that data verified later on.
What percentage of students or families would you say fill out the form? And I just want to clarify, is it your advice that every family coming into Michigan State or another campus go through this process?
We really advise everyone to at least do it the first time when you've got a freshman coming into Michigan State, and to, in a sense, test their eligibility to see what they're going to get. There is an aspect of federal loan programs that are not based on financial need that everyone qualifies for, but you have to complete the FAFSA mm-hmm. in order to be eligible. So that's one thing, is that a parent can borrow under a federal program simply as the parent of a dependent undergraduate student. And the undergraduate can also borrow under his or her own name, but only if they fill out the FAFSA. They don't have to demonstrate need. And so that's a great aspect. If they do demonstrate need, then, of course, they're automatically applying for all of those other programs at the same time. Importantly, for State of Michigan programs, although the dollars for the State of Michigan have gone down, they still are there. And so the only way to get out those dollars is to complete the FAFSA. So we really tell everyone to do it. We have around 72% of all of the students at MSU are getting financial aid, and surprisingly, freshmen, it's about 90%. So a lot of students who are bringing dollars in from a high school, from a church, from band boosters, whatever.
One of the contemporary issues right now in intercollegiate athletics is a term, cost of attendance, full cost of attendance. And having a student right now, a son, you know, you understand the tuition, you understand the housing, you understand the food, the room and board, but this cost of attendance, it's not unique, this conversation, to athletics. And if you could step outside that realm, can you talk how that is applied to scholarships maybe in other areas, music or other grants that may be provided to students on campus?
Well, Each year we establish, you know, what we call a financial aid budget, which is really more technically the cost of attendance. And it's our best estimate of what a student in a particular category might pay to be here for two semesters, that are our normal kind of academic period that students are here for. It would be fall and spring. And we take into account the tuition and fees that a student would pay if they were taking 15 credits a semester, which is what you need to take to graduate with 120 credits in 4 years. So we figure in that tuition and fees. We figure in room and board. If you're living in a residence hall and using the standard meal plan, which, of course, is all you can eat, so it's not really standard. It's a pretty premium plan. And it also includes what most students are paying for books, and then spending money, which is based on some reasonable assessments of what students tell us they're spending money on: cell phone, laundry, movies, etc.
Travel,
mm-hmm. Kind of a little bit of everything in there.
Right.
And for a student who is a resident of the state of Michigan, that's at Michigan State for the current year, that's just under $25,000 for all of that. Now,
Of which tuition is about?
Is about 12, about 12,000. Mm-hmm. It depends, again, on the number of credits that a student takes. And this is one of the discussions that we try to have with families, that's a difficult thing for them to understand, that although we put that number out there in front of them as our best estimate, it only fits when the student, in fact, is taking 15 credits and is doing all of the other things we say. Right. Michigan State is not going to charge them that number. What we're going to charge them is based on the number of credits the student's actually taking. Mm-hmm. So a lot of freshmen are taking 13 or 14 credits. they're paying less in tuition. Mm-hmm. Some students opt for a different kind of housing arrangement and maybe paying more or less. And, of course, that spending money is all over the map. And we try to say, you know, live like a student while you're in college so you don't have to when you're out of college. So minimize those expenses that are not direct educational expenses. And what we find is that that budget is very reasonable for the vast majority of students that come to us for help. It's enough to cover all of their expenses, you know, and let them have a little bit of entertainment, you know, money there too.
Great. People ask me quite often what keeps me up at night. What keeps you up at night?
Well, that's a really difficult question. Not as much as used to, actually. We have things running pretty smoothly in the Office of Financial Aid. And I say that for anybody who might listen in and say, gee, I tried to call the aid office and I wasn't able to get through after multiple attempts. We have a period of the year when we are unbelievably busy with people who want to talk to us. But that's not our whole cycle. Most of the year, we are able to answer every call that people make and deal with them you know, very adequately and quickly, and I think in most cases satisfactorily. So right now I'm sleeping well. During the busy part of the year as we gear up for the beginning of fall, that's when you have trouble sleeping, and it's simply because so many people want to talk to us at the same time that we just don't have enough trained staff, nor is it practical to train enough people to be able to help for just a few weeks.
Well, I think that this is an important point. I mean, we're so used as a society to call-in centers.
On-demand
call-in centers. So at Christmas time, we add a few more people to take an order for a widget.
Right.
And so one of the calls I usually get, so why is it that Michigan State and their financial aid office can't sort of add this period, like the call centers, more people to do the widget making? And the reality is that these, almost all the calls are very complex situations.
Require a knowledge base upon the staff.
And so it's not just about a technical error, because that's people right. can contact us through the web, and many, many people do, and mm-hmm. almost all of what I would call the confusion about packaging is resolved without human intervention.
That's right.
Because everything is transparent on the, and you know this from being a parent, everything is right. transparent on the website. You can even send a note and ask a question and get a response pretty quickly on the web for mm-hmm. relative, but most people who are calling because there's a major confusion.
They want to know, and they want to know now.
Well, but it's also usually their circumstances have changed dramatically, yep. as an example.
That's right. That's right. And we have stayed away from call center. Michigan State, we've had our own staff that we hire and we train, answer calls. Our feeling is it's not about the phone call. It's about what will be a four-year, or in some cases a five-year relationship that we have with them. We want them to feel that they're getting good information from the beginning to the end. But some, you know, good things take time, so sometimes it takes a while to get through. But we really do need to have people get in touch with us when they've had a change in circumstances and find that the financial aid package that they were offered doesn't make sense to them given their life situation at that point. Could be loss of employment, although we've not seen as much of that as we did a few years ago here. But we see things happen. People have house fires. There's a death in the family. There are unexpectedly an additional child in school that they didn't plan, or additional person in the household who they didn't plan on, and people come back home. So we want to talk to people because that does require making adjustments in both their application data as well as in the aid package, and really have to talk that through with folks. And so we spend an awful lot of time doing that. But we've been very fortunate in the last many years, thanks to President Simon, that we created what's called an Adverse Economic Circumstances Fund several years ago. It's maintained funding in it each year, and we use that for families that have things happen to them that they didn't expect. prior to establishment of that fund, we probably had committed all of our dollars early in the year, and it was hard to help people. Now we have that money available, and we can help people no matter when they come to us and no matter what their circumstances. If it makes sense to us, then we can help them.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Michigan State University President Luana Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis are talking with MSU's Director of Financial Aid, Rick Shipman.
I think, from my point, a parent to three and a parent of 800, the ability to work with your staff, with you, has been a tremendously positive experience. And I can kind of weigh that out over many, many different people. So I have the ability to make that statement. It's been extremely positive. I'm proud of what you're accomplishing. Let me ask one more trick question. If you were the chair of the NCAA or dropping into a Big Ten meeting tomorrow, what would be the one or two issues representing all of the people in your position across the country that you'd want to be to have taken forward?
I think that student athletes need to be treated like a student first for all purposes. So when you're talking about a student athlete who is needy, who has to depend on financial aid resources to cover expenses, then they really need to receive the same kind of consideration that a non-athlete would receive under the same circumstances. And I think that's the difficulty, is to see a really needy kid who is shortchanged in relation to his or her peers because of these rules that say they can't have as much as a non-athlete can have.
And then for my other parent role, my 13-year-old, eighth grader, talking to a parent, what advice would you want? What one takeaway would you want me to walk away from?
We believe in the financial aid world that the primary responsibility for higher education is really the family. And so we say to parents, is if you have a child who's got several years before college is going to be a reality, start saving. As a family, make that a priority. Set some money aside. Even if you can't save enough money to cover the full set of expenses, anything you have is going to be helpful to cover expenses. And then we say, and then remember that it's not a one-year commitment. It's going to be a four-year commitment for an undergraduate degree. So plan on that money.
Or in my case, 5 or 6 year commitment.
Or 5 or 6 years. So,
let me sort of play devil's advocate, because I know you hear this as well, that if I save money, somehow I'm disadvantaging myself from getting money that could come to me free because I've taken care of some savings for my kid. There is an expected parental contribution in every aid package. So what's Correct. That and sort of not, range is not ballpark, because it varies by how many kids you have and how many kids you have in college and your own circumstances. But there is in every package a family parental contribution. And what does that look like?
The family contribution is probably the thing about financial aid that people dislike the most, because everyone is convinced it's not accurate for them. But it is a federal calculation that's based on income, assets, family size, number in college, and actually the age of the older parent for retirement planning purposes. So it's a very complicated calculation, and it doesn't really mean that anyone thinks the family can afford to contribute that much money. It is more a federal index of eligibility. The federal government says, that you're not eligible for those dollars. So your family contribution can be zero. We have, at Michigan State, we have about 3,000 students who have a zero family contribution. The families are typically have income below $25,000. So not a lot of money. That's what it costs to be here for 1 year. So those parents are not expected to contribute anything. And we have the family contribution, can go up from there to anything. Typically, people who are demonstrating financial need have incomes below $85,000. And for the most significant gift aid, the families have incomes usually below $40,000. So That index determines whether you're getting need-based aid or only qualifying for the non-need-based aid.
So if you're a but you can, by filling out a federal financial aid, one of these forms, FAFSA forms, you can get a sense of what your family contribution could or would be.
Correct. And you don't even have to fill out the FAFSA to determine that. There is a federal forecaster that you can use at the federal government student aid website, which is available through the link on our website. And you can, at any point, doesn't matter how old your child is, doesn't matter what your circumstances are, you can get a sense for what your contribution would be. You also could use our own online calculator tool at Michigan State to determine what kind of an aid package you might have.
Final question to you, though, which is another myth I'd like to do a bit of Mythbusters on the way out. Many students at Michigan State have some form of financial aid because we're pretty much a middle-class family. As you commented, we have 3,000 students who have no parental contribution, and so there's really they're very talented, hardworking students, so access is there for their dreams. But when students leave here with educational debt, so not counting what they might have not managed their credit card well, I think the numbers I've heard that about half of our students leave with some debt.
Just less than half.
Okay.
So it's I'm actually really proud of that that fact, because it doesn't say anything about the financial aid office, really. We're not, you know, telling people to borrow, but it says something about the families, and that the families are doing things with their own money to avoid borrowing. And so I think that the families get a lot of credit for this. But less than half, but it is close to half, of the students who are not borrowing at all. For those students that are borrowing, the average that they're leaving school with and the median is about $23,000. It's less than the cost of one full year at Michigan State. And that's spread over four or a little bit more than 4 years. It's a very reasonable amount of money. It's less than the price of a new car. It is very reasonable, and it's for something that they carry with them for the rest of their life, not drive for 5 or 6 years.
Which also has, by most studies, a return on investment, even in this difficult market, because while unemployment rates for college graduates have increased slightly, they're half of and maybe a third of what they are for people without college educations. And the lifetime income stream is still a very good return on investment, no matter what you say. You may not have the 17 job offers that you might have liked in any place in the world when the economy was really booming, but there are opportunities. Now, again, there are always individual circumstances where those data don't match. But for parents, it's also important to think about where we are on average with our students and the fact that only half of them leave with educational debt.
No, that's right. And the federal government has done some things in the repayment programs for these loans to really make them very affordable for students. And under what's called the standard repayment program for a student loan, the student has 10 years to repay. Repayment doesn't begin until 6 months after they leave college. And if they borrowed about $25,000, let's say, just to use a round number, under the standard repayment program, they would pay just under $300 a month for that loan over 10 years. But they now can use something called an income-based repayment program that actually varies the amount based on how much a student's making. And the payment period for that kind of a loan can be spread over 20, 25 years if needed to do that. And the same loan under the income-based repayment would have an average payment of about $100 a month. So it's less money per month, and it doesn't matter whether you borrowed $25,000.
So it's 20 beers a month.
20 beers a month, right. And that dollar amount for repayment is the same if you borrowed $50,000 or $25,000, because it's an amount based on your income. The calculation doesn't have to do with how much you owe. It has to do with how much you make.
So what it means that students who go into lower income professions are still able to take a longer period of time for payment.
Absolutely.
And what's really critical, which is the last message of this, is that We are doing programs through the residence halls with a partnership with the MSU Federal Credit Union about how to better manage credit card debt, because these are predictable loans, predictable patterns, but there's also an accumulation of credit card debt that goes beyond our definition of cost of attendance. That should be a great concern for students and their families about how that's managed. And that's an issue that is often blamed on financial aid offices, but is not part of the fundamental cost of attendance.
Absolutely. When we have an opportunity to talk to parents together with their student before they start school, what we always suggest to them is that they have an open discussion, and financial aid people don't have to be present for it, where the parents tell the students what their expectations are and what they're ready to commit. So, you know, can the student have a credit card? If so, is it going to be co-owned or is it just the student's credit card? And how is that going to be managed? Should the student be working or not? What are the parents going to pay for? Are they going to pay for books, for tuition? Are they paying for everything? What are they paying for? Have that discussion. Very often we'll talk to a student who's a sophomore. Their parents did everything in the freshman year and have decided that the student should take over in the sophomore year. The student has no idea what it costs to be here because that discussion never occurred with the family. So we say you want them to come to Michigan State to, you know, learn how to be a productive adult. Help them by having the conversation with them and treat them as an adult right at the beginning and tell them what you're going to do and what you expect them to do, starting from day one on campus.
Rick, thank you very much for your time. I think you've given some parents listening some advice about how they can proceed and to check our website for additional information, even if you're not considering Michigan State.
Much appreciated.
Thank you.
That was MSU's Director of Financial Aid, Rick Shipman, talking with Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis and Michigan State University President Luanna Simon. To hear the conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. Up next, Simon and Hollis return to talk with Spartan swimming and diving coach Matt Giannotis.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. We've all heard the expression, it's all about who you know. And wherever you are on your career ladder, having a friend on the inside can make all the difference. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, you are instantly connected to 500,000 Spartans around the world, many of whom are key decision makers in just about every major enterprise. Whether you're looking for a way in or a way up, your MSU Alumni Association affiliation can help you link up with that MSU alum who'll always take your call just because you're a Spartan. Building your network right now before you need it is the best possible career insurance, and joining the MSU Alumni Association is the best possible way to get the most out of your Spartan life. Learn more online at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
Thanks, Shannon. Here's Spartan swimming and diving coach Matt Giannotis with Michigan State University President Luanna Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis.
Well, it's great to have our head men's and women's swimming coach Matt Giannotis with us here on the show. I think you know, anytime you look within the athletic department, there are different components of how you measure success. And very, very proud of how you handle a diverse group of kids, kind of a wide range of student athletes. But how do you go about defining success when you look at the men's and women's program at Michigan State?
Well, I think I define success by being able to tie it back to the great people and the great coaches who have been part of the program in the past. One of the things I think that defines us, probably what we do best more than anything else, is establishing a connection on the men's and the women's side all the way through through the 1940s, even when the women weren't even officially, quote-unquote, officially a team. And then having them come back and be part of the program and then having that continue on almost like we did last weekend with Celebrate 2012. For us, there is a past, there's a present, and there is a future. And our alumni and the people who have swam and dove here in the past are really a big part of that.
I think, you know, one of the things that we look for are accomplishments, both by teams and individuals. This past year being an Olympic year, and I think it's something President Simon will want to talk about, the pool that they swam in and the linkage to Michigan State with our art museum. But to have the kids that we had represent not only Michigan State but the nation in the Olympic trials had to be something that you were proud of. I know I was.
Yeah, I was. You know, I was really proud of it. The only thing I wasn't proud of is the fact that NBC cut away when our young man who semifinaled his heat, they cut away to commercial and then came back to show Michael Phelps. But so we could have had the Spartan helmet, you know, on TV live in a swim meet, which would have been great. It would have been the first time in 16, 20 years that had happened. But yeah, those, and the best thing about all of those six individuals who went there is none of them had their standard before they came to MSU. And all of them are incredibly good students in difficult majors. So, yeah, you want to talk about representatives of the university. All six of those kids are great, and it was fun being out in Omaha.
You may want to, for our listening audience, explain what standards mean and how people get to be able to compete for Olympic spots.
Well, standards are time standards in every particular event, and you have to make that time standard in order to be invited into the Olympic trials. So none of the kids were fast enough before they came to Michigan State to be invited in there, and then they gained the ability or they gained the time while they were here at MSU.
Well, I think this is an important part of a role of coaching. Obviously, it would be much easier if everyone who came already had world-class times, and then you sort of found a pool and coached them on to get that last fraction of a second that might make them a winner in an international competition. But for Michigan State, many of the student athletes that come here in swimming and diving are students who you've really helped to make extraordinarily better, not simply in the pool but academically. So talk about what that means as a coach.
Well, first of all, I appreciate that coming from the president. But second of all, yes, our typical student athlete that we get is, and it's difficult sometimes in recruiting, and there's a lot of misses, but there are also a lot of hits. It's somebody that we feel their best years are in front of them, somebody that we feel has a Spartan, like let's call it a Spartan land grant work ethic, somebody who is going to listen and work really, really hard in order to succeed, and more than likely, it's somebody who I don't want to say back door, but it's somebody who's going to get in through the back door. And then once they get in through that back door, they're going to get in through the Big Ten competition, not through the front door usually, but through the back door. And then once they get in that back door, they really start doing a nice job for sure.
Well, I think part of that is taking risk with kids athletically, but not risk with kids academically or in terms of their own character.
Correct. And I think for us, it's been my experience, at least in swimming and diving, is that people who don't take shortcuts academically are not going to take shortcuts athletically, because swimming is hard. It's a lot of work. And you can ask my own children with the fact that they don't swim for competition because they've grown up around how much work it really involves. So usually somebody who – we have a very high level of academic excellence on our team, and we've had academic achievers, and not all of them, I would say, have the highest IQs. It's more basically banging out the work and having the ability to go to class every day, to get up to go to class every day and do what you have to do in order to get good grades, you know.
What we see now in the exposure of women in sports like swimming and diving, where in Olympic trials and on the world stage, it's accepted that women are very much a part of that. That wasn't always true in college athletics. in the way in which women's sports have evolved over a long period of time. I think it is important that there were great swimmers here who were women in a period of time when swimming was not really part of the NCAA structure. And now you're a coach of a combined team of men and women. What are the sort of the joys and the challenges that go with that dual role?
You know, it's funny. At the most basic level, being able to run a combined team for 10 years now, and then being an assistant for 5 years previous to that, it's made me a better parent more than anything else, because it's really given me an understanding of sometimes how women work and how men work, and the ability to handle women and the ability to handle men. Now, I have a really good coaching staff that works with me too. My associate head coach, Kathleen Malloy, has been invaluable in my own personal development in handling women. But the dynamics that we get day to day are incredible. As you can only imagine, having 50 to 60 collegiate kids that train together so closely. Sometimes we have relationships that go between the two teams, boyfriends, girlfriends, and kids who have swam here, who've gone on and gotten married and had families and everything else. But sometimes those relationships don't work out, so you have to be able to handle those too, and when they're on the same team. So it's provided challenges. I will say this. The one thing that I have learned is when you coach women and they're successful, they really want to share the success with the coach. Sometimes when you coach men and they're successful, the guys are really good at sometimes pushing the coach out of the way and having the spotlight to themselves. But I've never coached a female who has had success that doesn't want to share that with her team and her coach. So that's one thing I definitely have picked up on. I don't know if that is politically correct, but I know that's one thing that I have learned over the years.
Well, there are, I think, not that every woman or every man is the same, because there's a wide variation of people and traits. And I can identify maybe a woman or two I know who might have pushed a coach out of the way along the way.
I got a few, too.
So I don't think you may have a unique situation there. But I think the blend of the asset base in terms of leadership, different styles of leadership, different experiences, I think provide an energy for a team that cannot be sort of underestimated. And I think it relates to the work ethic and some of the other things that you talk about in terms of the traditions and the culture of Michigan State swimming and diving.
Sure.
I think to build upon one thing you said there, President Simon, is having just turned 50 years old, and 50 is much harder than 40, you kind of reflect back on things that have happened in your life. And this year we're celebrating an event that happened at Jenison that was the start of the end of segregation in college sports. You talk about the 40th anniversary of Title IX, and I think in both cases our society still has a long ways to go. But we're kind of in a period of time, I believe, right now that administrators, presidents, athletic directors, coaches are doing things because it's they want to do it, not that they're required to do it. And you're seeing the support of 25 sports at Michigan State that from equipment to facilities is really coming online with a level of equity that is not only required but is desired, if that makes sense.
Right. And I think in fairness to Matt and the swimming and diving program, one of the areas where we have not been able to make a dramatic difference in facilities has been in swimming and diving.
And that's a challenge for our swimming program. There's no doubt about it, and Matt can speak to that. But the thing I like about our coaches is they take what they have. They always ask for more, but they take what they have, and they use those resources most efficient way that they can for academic, athletic, and cultural experiences on this great campus.
Let me at least give one plug to our facility, if I could. From about September, you know, the term begins in the fall through about mid-October, there's only really one place in the country that has a better setup than we do, and that would be Stanford University. Our outdoor pool, at least for our program, has been invaluable, and having access to that through the physical plant and through a lot of people in rec sports has really helped our program succeed, and we've pushed that through recruiting. Yes, when you come to Michigan State, we do have on some levels an inferior facility indoors. But our outdoor facility, especially when you start talking about being able to get on Olympic teams and national teams and USA swimming teams, and diving teams for that matter, because we have an outdoor tower, has been really helpful for us. And so, yes, we could probably use quite a few improvements. Who couldn't? Everybody's always asking for something. But that outdoor pool is a real gem here at Michigan State. And I don't know if people really know the history. It was built actually to host – one of the reasons it was built, it was to host the 1959 Pan American Trials mm-hmm. for the USA swim team. And through the 1960s, Michigan State was one of the preeminent schools involved in getting people on USA swim teams, men and women, even though we didn't officially have a women's team till 1970. But, yeah, everybody has bad things, but everybody has good things too. So that outdoor pool is a real gem, and we really appreciate it.
Well, and I think it is something that is important about, I think, Mark's comment, your comment, Matt. Everyone can ask in life for more things and more material things, more resources, more money, maybe that they were a little bit smarter. I mean, there's moments when everybody can wish that they were different. but really, the success of Michigan State, the success really of America, has come from people who recognize that while they might wish for more, they also have tremendous assets within themselves and around them and can use those in ways that make a huge difference. And I think that's been the philosophy of the swimming and diving team. It's in part the philosophy of the university and the athletic department as well.
Yeah, I guess we're one of the few, and I don't know because I don't know how other people recruit on campus, although I am friends with all the head coaches here, but we're one of the few teams maybe that say, hey, look, when you come here, it's going to be hard, and you're going to have to get up in the morning and swim outdoors, and there's a good chance it might be snowing later on in the season while you're swimming outdoors. And for me, I think that's one of the, like swinging back to the beginning of this, that's one of the things that really ties our alumni and the people who have competed and trained here to the people who are currently competing and trained here, because they know how difficult it really is. When a kid makes it through Michigan State 4 years, we have a ceremony we call the Golden Spike Ceremony, and it's a big thing with our alumni. They've been awarding it here since 1945. Really, it was the Seibold family, and Jack used to be the director of admissions here. He's the one who really instituted it. And when you get that Golden Spike, there's a certain level of respect that you have from all the people who have competed and trained here in the past, because they know how difficult it is sometimes being able to earn it, you know.
Well, and I think that, again, having to earn things, no matter how talented you are, is a trait that is a life skill that's extraordinarily important, and one of the great values of sport. It's not so much that the moment in the sun or the minute and a half or whatever the time is that goes for the race or 4 minutes. It really is that capacity to take what comes out of sport and make it life lessons that can serve you well no matter where you go in the world.
Right.
I think just to close up, you mentioned your friends with the coaches. Talk a little bit about the resources, not only within athletics, but the people across campus that as a head coach, I always find myself saying, let's break down castles, break down walls. If the swimming program sees the another sport being successful, that's good for swimming. Likewise, if there's units on campus and we can celebrate success with them, who do you reach out to garner up support to help with the swimming program, but also help with Michigan State?
Well, I reach out to all of them. If I could, I'd like to relay a story. One of the boys who went to the Olympic trials, we were talking about one of the six, and when he was here on his official visit, we took him to lunch. Of course, President Simon won't remember this, but I do, and so does he and his parents.
I bet she does too.
he was interested in building construction management, and she was having lunch over there, and I rudely interrupted her and said, do you mind talking to this young man about building construction management? And 15 minutes later, at that point, whether we were offering him a scholarship or not, he was coming. And so sometimes your administration has the ability to set a tone or set the policy, I guess. I don't know if it's a policy, but the tone through the entire university. I reach out to everyone. My peers within the Big Ten and then within nationally, swim coaches, sometimes they're floored when I start telling stories about the access I have to Mark, the access I have to Mark Hollis, Mark D'Antonio, the access I have to Tom Izzo, Susie, you name it. It's a really, really tight department here. I think a lot of the credit, of course, goes through Mark Hollis, but I think it all goes back to Clarence Underwood. I've been here long enough that, for a while there, we were measuring not how many years you were here, but how many ADs and how many football coaches. And I think the stability that has been brought on really administratively on every level now has really helped with that. I think having access to those guys and women just make you a better everything. It makes you a better coach, better recruiter. No one's a better recruiter than Tom Izzo is, and we've had, you know, we've had professional development with Tom where he's basically given some of the things that he's done from a recruiting standpoint. So, you know, if everybody – it's called Team MSU, right? And if everybody's on the same team and you're great teammates, then everybody moves forward. You win games when you have a great team. And for me, that's one of the things that's really kept me here. It's one of the things that's really helped me professionally, but it helps our program as well. You know?
Well, I think team is important, and you were not rude. I was glad to talk with you, man, about it. But the other neat thing we can now say is that we'll have a museum, freestanding museum designed by Zaha Hadid, that who was the architect for the swimming facility for the last Olympics, and so there'll be a connection between that swimming facility and Michigan State. So
he'll try to find a way to dive off the top of it too.
I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know.
I think it's it may be a harder landing than he's used to. But
thanks for joining us. We're proud to have you on the team.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Matt.
Appreciate it.
That was Spartan swimming and diving coach Matt Giannotis talking with Michigan State University President Luanna Simon and Spartans athletic director Mark Hollis. To hear the conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com.
I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Whether you're moving across town or across the country, relocating to a new job or a new city is always a challenge. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, wherever you go, you'll have an instant circle of friends on hand to help you get settled and get connected. With more than 100 clubs and affiliates around the world, there's a Spartan in just about every city. And as an MSU Alumni Association member, you'll quickly feel right at home. Wherever you go, community, connections, careers, and class, four great reasons to visit alumni.msu.edu today to activate your membership in the largest Spartan organization in the world. That's alumni.msu.edu, the Michigan State University Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
We take the month to bring to women's attention the importance of being aware of breast cancer. As we know, breast cancer is one of the leading causes of death in women in the United States, and early detection can lead to early cure and or prevention of long-term, more adverse or bad effects of a breast cancer.
Gerald Aben, MD, is with Michigan State University's Department of Radiology.
The American Cancer Society and the American College of Radiology continue to recommend that a woman should begin to have screening evaluation of the breast with mammography done about the age of 40. After that, typically a screening follow-up would be on an annual basis.
There's more information online at rad.msu.edu.
MSU AgBio Research is changing the face of science.
People should know that AgBio Research is really the first front at MSU dealing with environmental issues and natural resources issues.
Dr. Steve Papke leads MSU Ag Bio Research. More than 300 scientists from six MSU colleges are leading innovation in food, natural resources, and energy.
MSU Ag Bio Research really is changing the face of science. If we can do that right, we create economic opportunities here in Michigan and opportunities for our researchers to make some really interesting discoveries.
Our goal is to generate economic prosperity, sustain natural resources, and enhance the quality of life for all.
We're MSU Ag Bio Research.
Visit agbioresearch.msu.edu. MSU Ag Bio Research is changing the face of science.
What my grandson taught me about life. Love me, feed me, keep me healthy, and teach me how I can do the same thing for others. Hudson, Scott Westerman. Well, Hudson didn't exactly say that. He's just past one and is still working on Mama, Dada, Dumbledore, and Eat. But isn't that the essence of what life is really all about? Love me. We aren't born with hate. It's a learned behavior. We hate people who don't believe what we believe. We hate people who are different than we are. We hate people who won't do what we want them to do. There is only one thing we can do to soften and eliminate hatred. Model the opposite behavior. That can be a challenge. Distrust and dislike are burned into our brains by our own life experience. It's hard to change that. Our best hope for the future is a generation that seeks solutions, that create a better existence for everyone. If that's what you want, walk the talk. The most important lesson parenting has taught me is that there are only two things you can do to raise great kids. Model the behaviors you expect and love them. That doesn't guarantee a good outcome, but our own character is the only thing we can control. Now, this law applies to all relationships. If your intentions are in the right place and the other person ends up in the wrong place, it's not your fault. Feed me. Hunger and conflict go hand in hand, writes former Clinton National Security Advisor Samuel Berger. Empty stomachs breed panic and desperation. And desperation feeds everything from crime to regime change. What would it be like if poverty was something we only read about in the history books? Here is the personal corollary to that. What you put into your body will directly impact the quality and quantity of your life. How you manage your resources will determine how well you will fare when the going gets tough. Keep me healthy. Do we have a moral obligation to help the sick? Is healthcare an entitlement or a commodity? Are we practicing healthy behaviors, or are we on our way to becoming patients of our own making? Whatever the answers are to these three questions, our children will likely mirror. Teach me how I can do the same thing for others. This last thing happens automatically. We are born without prejudice. Intolerance, ignorance, violence, and hate are all things that we create by action or inaction. We are role models, whether we like it or not. Others will be influenced by what we say and do. The next generation will be a reflection of who we are. We expect our children to be responsible for their actions. We expect them to be tolerant, considerate, and empathetic. We expect them to keep their space in at least as good condition as it was when they walked in the room. Personal responsibility, compassion, and the desire to leave the world in better shape than we found it. If we want others to do it, we must do it too. The wonderful thing about a child is their ability to see the world as it is. They are born without the fear of saying, "Love me, feed me, keep me healthy, and teach me how I can do the same for others." It's what happens after they come into the world that either amplifies it or changes it. And perhaps they are our role models, after all. I'm Scott Westerman at scottwesterman.com. Now you've heard it. Go out and do it.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Our mission is to be your personal network for life.
Scott Westerman leads the Michigan State University Alumni Association.
The best reason to become a certified Spartan by joining the MSU Alumni Association is the network of 500,000 Spartans that are out there that we can connect you with.
Join the Michigan State University Alumni Association online at alumni.msu.edu.
Victory for MSU!
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.